Good morning. So last time we talked about a few little things in C, notably things that you wouldn't have come across from C++ as much. So one was about structs in C, how they're not quite like C++, notably that there's this typedef trick that you'll commonly see in C code. It's not complicated, but it's not a pattern you would ever see in C++, where when you define a struct, you can use the name of the struct as the type. C doesn't work that way, so we have to use typedefs. Talked a little about malloc and free, which I know you saw like once in 2150, barely, but we'll have to use on the next assignment as it happens. We talked about signed versus unsigned comparisons, how they produce weird results, and a general sort of large category of weird results known as undefined behavior, that C and C++, as it happens, have these standards that define what the language does, and the compiler writers implement them, and sometimes the standards say, we don't care what happens, and often the compiler writers take that as liberty to be inconsistent. And we saw one example of that, where sometimes my compiler decided that signed overflow would do what we learned in 2150 with 2's complement and wrap around, and sometimes it decided to optimize it assuming the overflow didn't happen. And both of these were permitted by the standard, so it's something you as a C developer have to watch out for, because you're not going to get the sort of warnings you're used to from something like Java, where you know that always has the same behavior or it's an error or something. Then we started talking about bitwise operations, that we said in hardware, when we have a value, we're going to put it on a bunch of wires. We're going to represent each bit of the value, say, by a voltage of those wires. And it's really easy to extract some of the bits of that value. And we have the same capabilities in software just with normal math, like division, modulus, give us all the abilities to extract bits using our knowledge of how base 2 works, and dividing by 16 is like removing 4 bits from the end, just like dividing by 10 is like removing a digit from the end in base 10. But we can do something nicer than that by taking advantage of them being bits, and the hardware wants to expose these operations. And we learned one way of exposing these, which was bit shifts. Our way of extracting a few wires, we can have the bits be shifted over in the register, and we have to do something with the extra bits. So when we shift things over to the right, we have to put something in the top bits of the register, because they're there. And we saw that there were 2 choices, one of which was more handy for signed numbers and one of which was more handy for unsigned numbers when we think about comparing to division. So the logical shift was to add zeros. The arithmetic shift was to just copy the sign bit. The logical shift gave us division with unsigned numbers. The arithmetic shift gave us division with different rounding for signed numbers. And when we finished up, I think we just barely touched on left shifts, which are the opposite of right shifts, and don't have that complicated choice because we just shift in zeros and it's equivalent to multiplication. It's not really a reason to provide something else. Okay. Any questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so this week we have a lab on memory safety, where we're going to use a memory error detection tool called Address Sanitizer and fix some code which has a bunch of memory errors, like using things after they're freed or allocating the wrong amount of space and going outside the bounds of an array, and fix those errors, hopefully in the lab time. We will give significant partial credit if you don't manage to find everything in the lab time, but we think it is possible for most students to find everything. After that, we have a homework which is just some C practice to help refresh things you forgot in 2150, mostly with pointers, and that's dealing with lists. And we have 3 types of lists, 3 different ways of representing lists in C. So one of them is something we call a sentinel terminated array. So we just allocate one big chunk of memory and we place a value at the end, which we never want to put on the list. In this example, I've arbitrarily chosen -9999. The homework write-up has the actual thing our code uses in the supplied code. And that indicates the end. You've seen this before with C strings, where it's this sentinel terminated array where the sentinel value is the character zero. For in shorts, you probably don't use zero because zero seems more likely to be a thing you want in the list. So, which is why I chose this large negative number. We also have this idea of a range. This is basically what a vector looks like internally, if you think of C++, where we have a length and a pointer. The pointer points to the actual values and just has enough space for the length, or at least as far as we're concerned. And the last one is a linked list, which hopefully is familiar to you from 2150 or some other course. And here I'm using that struct note key, because as I mentioned last time, given this declaration, I can't use the name node that we use for the struct normally, because it's not defined until after this semicolon. Example of that, otherwise I'd say linked list, and you just have to write code that deals with the linked list. In the cases of these list data structures, just note what's on the heap. So for the sentinel terminated array, this array is on the heap. For the range, this range is on the heap. For the linked list, all the linked list nodes are on the heap. Everything else is in the stack or in register. So our head pointer is not dynamically allocated. It's in as a stack or passed in registers. For our range, our entire struct, and this is usually what confuses people the most about where things are, is on the stack. And when we pass it to the function, we're passing it as an argument. It's going to be passed in registers or on the stack based on the calling convention. We're not going to pass a pointer unless we want to, in our examples, to modify it. So the list homework is to implement a function to convert between two of these types of lists and to do append and remove of equal for one of them. The append and remove of equal functions take a pointer to a list. So for a linked list, we represent the head of the linked list with a pointer, so it takes a pointer to a pointer. We have to do that because let's say we start out with an empty list, which is a null pointer, and we want to make it not empty. Then we have to modify that head pointer. We need a pointer to it to do that. Or the other way around, if we start up with a non-empty list and we want to make it empty, we have to modify the head pointer. We need a pointer to it to do that. And so that's why the functions take that. Okay. So any questions on these lists? Okay. So let's pick up where we went on bitwise. So I mentioned we talked about things where we wanted to extract some bits the second nibble, this second set of four bits from a value. And we did division. The opposite of that, if we want to put a value in the second four bits, is multiplication. Multiplying by 16 is just adding a bunch of zeros in binary. And in hardware, this is in fact really, really simple. We just, if we're representing our values as a set of wires with each bit, we just have a bunch of wires which have a fixed voltage of zero, let's say. And we just put them alongside, and this action is free. And we didn't have to actually do any computation. And can we try to expose something like this simplicity to software? And the answer is yes. And you might think, well, we have the shift right operation. This is basically just shifting in the other direction. So maybe I can supply a negative number. And this would be a reasonable API. It's just not what C has chosen, and it's not what x86 assembly has chosen. So you just can't do that, even though it would make sense. So instead, we have a different instruction and a different operator for going in the other direction. And in this case, we're always going to shift in zeros because we never have to worry about getting weird results with sign numbers, because we aren't changing the sign bit except by overflow. So that's our shift left instruction. You might occasionally see there's an arithmetic left shift instruction in x86. For our purposes, it doesn't do anything usefully different than this. And this shift left instruction is equivalent to multiplying by a power of 2, even with negative numbers. Okay, so any questions about left shift? Okay, so that's moving bits over to one place. So let's talk about a little more complicated of an operation that's simple to do when we're thinking about bits that we'd like to expose to software. And that's, let's say I have this 16-bit number, I'd like to extract the second nibble. So before, I just shift over by 4, but that won't work here because then I'd get this 1F2, but I would just want the 2. So what's something I can do that? And remember, like when we started out, you definitely know a way of doing this because you can do this with just things like division that you would have used before you knew about binary existing. So what is a way of writing a function that, given 1F20 in hex gives us the 2, only the 2? I'll give some time to think about it. So you want to XOR it with, let's talk about your solution. So you want to XOR it. You want to do value XOR, which in C, as we'll learn, is represented with this operator with X. So with what?
FF0F.
So presumably hex, FF0F. Okay. So this, it turns out, will produce, in the case of this example, the result 0E02F. So probably not what we want. Yeah?
Bitwise AND it with 0XF0.
Okay, so bitwise AND with 0FF0.
F0.
With F0, okay.
It's like 2 digits.
With F0, okay. So that will get us, in this case, it turns out 0x20, and I'll talk about how I computed those later for those who will go over that. So that's not quite what we want yet, but we can do what we did earlier to move it over 4 bits. It's the value, we have an extra 4 zeros binary. Now, there's a way, both people have proposed solutions that use bitwise operators. There's a way of doing this without bitwise operators. That's not, yeah. What? Usually, there's a way of doing it without shifts or bitwise AND or XOR, etc.
Something to do with like remainders?
Okay. Yeah, something to do with remainders. Anything more specific?
So maybe like dividing by like 1/2, something like 0/0 or remainder.
Okay, so you want some sort of remainder.
Yeah.
Someone think of what remainder do we want? So one thing which might help is that if we think of how base 16 works, this is 16 to the 0 place. This is the 16 to the 1, 16 to the 2, 16 to the 3. So we can get rid of, we can divide by 16 to get rid of this place. And then we can take the remainder mod 16 to get rid of our 16 to the 1 that's left over and 16 to the 2 factor that's left over. So there are two simple answers with just division and remainders. So one of them is I get rid of, I just extract the bottom part of the value by taking the remainder mod 256, which is 16 squared. And that it removes the 1f, and then I divide by 16. The other option is that I take the, I divide by 16 to remove the 0 at the end, and then take mod 16 to get that last hexadecimal digit, just like we take the remainder mod 10 to get the last decimal digit. And divide by 10 to move over one decimal digit. So this is doing the same thing you might think of for manipulating base 10 numbers, but in hexadecimal. So some people alluded to that, yeah, this will work, but division is going to be pretty expensive. You might ask, well, modulus, is that expensive? It turns out in x86, the typical way of compiling a modulus in general, if you don't have with just a random like variable operands, is to use the divide operator, divide instruction, so it's exactly as expensive. But we want to expose that better, and the way we're going to do that is with the bitwise operator some of you know about, which is how we expose the software manipulating individual bits. And we're going to talk about both what they do and sort of ways you can think about, you know, given that I have a particular task to do, how do I come up with a correct way of using the bitwise operators and reason about what that is. And the reason we expose these bitwise operators is because in the hardware, our sort of fundamental building block for doing computations are gates. And gates take in some number of bits, output bits, so we can represent them with a truth table. So this is the sort of circuit picture of, in this case, an XOR gate. But we're going to represent bits, these gates, with a truth table, where we say they have two inputs, and they have a particular value based on just those inputs and nothing else. And I'm going to start with the truth table for AND, and I'm going to start with the truth table for AND because for what we're doing, AND is probably the most useful of these things that we can represent as a gate that we'll want to expose. And the reason I say AND is probably the most useful is we have started with that task of let's extract a few bits of a value. And the AND operator, we can look at it as a way of doing that. That if we AND with 1, we're saying keep this bit. Because we look at what the result of ANDing with 1 is. If we start with a 0, ANDed with 1, we get 0. If we start with a 1, ANDed with 1, we get 1. So ANDing with 1 is a way of saying keep this bit the same. And ending with 0 is a way of saying clear this bit. And when we looked at the task we had back here, what we really wanted, one of the things we wanted to do was we just wanted to clear these extra bits that we didn't care about and keep some bits. And AND is exactly a tool for doing that. So when we want, whenever you see a number and you want to like only look at certain bits, the general pattern is you AND with what's called a mask. So you make a mask where you just write a number which has ones in the places where you want to keep things, zeros where you don't. And that's sort of the systematic way of choosing that. And we're going to use this with the bitwise AND operator. So we said that ending with 1 says keep this bit the same, ending with 0 doesn't. And we have an operator which treats our integer value as an array of bits. And this is the bitwise AND operator. So we're going to construct this number which has ones in the places we want to keep and zeros where we don't. And we're going to use this bitwise AND operator, which is going to say, okay, you're asking me to AND 2 and 4. I know 2 is 0, 0, 1, 0. I'm going to just go each bit. I'm going to take 0, ANDed with 0, 1, ANDed with 0, 0, ANDed with 1, and just do that to get each bit of the result. So I'm going to do if I have 64-bit numbers, 64 AND operations, one for each pair of bits. And that's what we have this whole suite of bitwise operators to do. And if we think about the hardware, well, this is really simple because we just have an array of these gates, and that's how we implement it in hardware. These gates are really cheap, and if we have 64-bit numbers, we probably actually have just 64 of them sitting in the processor. So this is our bitwise AND operation. So to give another example, here I have 10 ANDed with 7. So 10 is 1010 in binary, 7 is 111. So I do 0 ANDed with 1 is 0, 1 ANDed with 1 is 1, 0 ANDed with 1 is 0, 1 ANDed with 0 is 0. And we can think of this as really saying, if we remember what I just said about keeping and clearing bits, that the 7 is saying, I want to keep the bottom 3 bits the same and clear all the others. And that's exactly what we do when we have 10 ANDed with 7, that I'm going to keep the bottom 3 bits of 10 the same, which gives me 0, 1, 0, and ignore all the others, which gets rid of that one higher bit that was set. Okay, so any questions about I've shown here. So in C, and I'm showing here the C syntax. So the C single AND percent operator is very different from the double ampersand operator. And the same is going to be true of the single pipe operator, which is going to be very different from the double pipe operator. And notably under very different, you shouldn't, you know, we see here a case where we have true AND with true. If we had double AND, that would be 1, and it's 0. So this is the operation that the hardware is going to expose. So in x86, there's an AND instruction, which takes two registers, ANDs them together, kind of works like ADD as far as, so AT&T syntax, destination is the last thing in the line. So ANDs them together. It turns out the order AND is, you know, it doesn't matter which way order you have the values in because that truth table is symmetrical. So we don't have to worry about something like subtraction where we have to know which order things are in. As I mentioned, in hardware, this is going to be really fast because this is basically what the hardware implementation is going to look like. We're just going to get the value. We're going to have some set of wires that represent each of these values, and we're just going to send all those wires into pairs of gates. So it doesn't matter that we're doing 64 AND operations. They're just all going to happen all at once, and it's really fast. Okay. And so once we know about this AND to keep certain bits operations, we can apply that like we saw earlier. So we had this solution where we extract one byte, that second nibble to get it. So here I'm saying we have, you want to get this second nibble. So one way I do that is I first extract, zero out all the other bits, which is a solution someone brought up earlier. And then I move it over to the place I want it, which is at the bottom of the number, because I asked for just the second nibble, not the second nibble multiplied by 16 or moved over. That's what I'm looking for. Or alternately, I can move this value to the right place. So I want it at the bottom of the number. So at first I can shift the bits over to get it in the place I want it. And then I can clear all the other bits by ANDing. And both of them are equivalent and basically as fast as each other. The same result. And in both cases, I had to choose the number to AND with. And you can see if I just look at the binary, you can see I just put ones in the bits I wanted to keep and zeros everywhere else. And I've written that as hexadecimal, partly because I can't write binary constants in C, and partly to save space. Okay, so any questions about what I've shown here? Okay. And both these functions convert into pretty straightforward assembly. Each of our operators converts to basically one instruction with a typical compiler. Okay, so that's our basic bitwise thing. And we have some other bitwise operators. And the way I like thinking about them is sometimes our task isn't going to be, I want to only keep certain bits, or I want to only clear certain bits. We're going to have some other things to do. And we have these OR and XOR operators, which do two different tasks. So the OR operator, sort of the way I like thinking about it for I have to manipulate a number purposes, is it's a way to conditionally set a bit. We can say that if we're ORing with one, then we're always making that bit be set. If we're ORing with zero, we're leaving the bit unchanged. So you can think of the OR operator is, if I tell you set these bits in the number no matter what they were before, the OR operator is the way you do that. And your mask, rather than saying what bits to keep or what bits to clear, is saying what bits to set with things that you have as zero in your mask, you're just leaving unchanged. An XOR, we can think of in a similar way as conditionally flipping a bit. If I say to flip certain bits in a number, we XOR work with a mask which has ones in the places we want to flip and zeros in the places we don't. So questions about this way of thinking about OR and XOR? So now we have tools for extracting certain bits from numbers, for setting certain bits in numbers, for clearing certain bits in numbers, which we can do with AND with a different mask, and for flipping certain bits in numbers. So we can do all these sorts of things which are really convenient hardware. We have a way of doing them in software. We just have to use these notions of mask to specify what parts of a many-bit number we're working on. And functionally, all these operators work like the AND operator, but just with a different truth table. So here, we looked up in this truth table. We're going to do the same bit-by-bit thing, but we're going to look up 0 and one, ORed with 1, and we're going to look in the OR truth table and get 1. And similarly, for XOR, we're going to look up 0 or XORed with 1 and get 1, 1 XORed with 1 and get 0, and so on. And we can see the interpretation as setting bits. So here I have 10 ORed with 7. We can think of 7 as saying set the lower three bits no matter what they were. And we end up having the lower three bits set in the new number, get 15. With XOR, we can think of it as flip the lower three bits. So we flip 0 into 1. We flip 1 into 0. We flip 0 into 1 in those lower three bits. And we leave the other bits unchanged. And in assembly, these have the obvious names of OR and XOR. I think we've seen XOR mostly used for the setting to zero. This is a common thing you'll see in compiler-generated assembly, is to XOR a value with itself to set it to zero, because it turns out to be, in some cases, more efficient than the obvious move zero into a value for mostly historical reasons. So there's one more bitwise operator we have. And this is the complement operator. So you can think of this as a bitwise version of exclamation point, just like single ampersand is like a bitwise version of double ampersand. You can think of this complement, this tilde operator, as a bitwise version of single ampersand. Of exclamation point. So exclamation point looks at the value, and the whole value sees if it's true or false. This looks at each bit and flips it. And this is a one operand operator, just like exclamation point. So there's no mask. It just works in every bit. So if I do tilde 0, I get all the bits flipped. If we're dealing with sign numbers, that's -1. Similarly, if I do tilde 2, we're dealing with sine numbers, that's negative 3. So any questions about what we see here? Okay. And I believe the x86 operator for this is not. x86 instruction is not for this. There might be other ways of doing it. Okay. So those are our basic building blocks. And our assignment, not this week, but next week, we have an assignment on some bit manipulation puzzles, where we're going to have you solve some problems with bitwise operators. And you might say, why are we doing this? So one thing is that it's good for thinking about hardware design, because these bitwise operators are sort of proxies for the tools we're going to have in hardware. It's good to understand what these bitwise operators are. Also, these are unreasonably common interview questions. They are bad interview questions because they're probably being asked because the interviewers think that you have to be really clever, not that you can just learn some techniques and know how to solve these problems. Like, pretty consistently. Okay. And the problems we're going to have you solve might be things you could do with normal arithmetic and comparisons, and whether the bitwise operators are faster or not, probably not, but it gives you insight into what the hardware might look like, and sometimes the bitwise operators are better ways of doing things. Okay, so I'm going to start with an example, and we're going to go through the ternary operator as sort of a motivating example. So ternary operator is a thing that exists in C, C++, and Java that you may or may not have used. You'll probably come across eventually if you use C, C++, or Java professionally. And that's this thing with a question mark and a colon. And it's equivalent, so this W equals X question mark Y colon Z is equivalent to if X, then Y equals W equals Y, otherwise W equals Z. It has the advantage that you can do it in one line, which some people really like, some people think you really shouldn't do. But we're going to use this as an example, and we're going to implement this with bitwise operators. And you can think of an assembly that if we do the straightforward thing with bitwise operators, maybe we end up with branchless assembly, which might be good. This is going to help us think about the sorts of things we can do with bitwise operators and also maybe relate a little to what happens in hardware. Okay, so we're going to start out by simplifying this. So I'm going to want to implement this without if, else, or operator, something that will probably result in jump-free assembly. And to keep things simple to start with, we're just going to say that X, Y, and Z are going to be 0 or 1 only. Those are the only possible values. So we're going to probably use bitwise operators, but there's only one bit they'll be working with because all the others will be 0. So you don't have to worry about them very much. So this still seems pretty daunting. And you might say, well, we could make a truth table for this and try to compare it to our bitwise operators' truth tables. But we have 3 values, not 2. So one general strategy when you have a problem like this is that we can do divide and conquer. That I'm going to divide this into 2 subproblems. And my subproblems are going to be that if X, then Y, and if not X, then Z. And in the other case, I'm going to choose to get a value of 0. So something to note about these 2 options is that if I OR these together, then I get if X, then Y OR 0, otherwise 0 OR with Z. that make sense? And y ord with 0 is going to be y. We can think of or as just setting bits in the mask based on the mask. The mask is nothing set, so we're just not doing anything to the number. And we can think of oring with z as setting all the bits in z in 0, which gives us z. So these are both, this is going to be, so if we or these two values together, we get our final answer. So this means that if we can just solve these two subproblems, we can or the two expressions we get together, and we'll have a final answer. That is the original problem. And the reason this simplifies things is that these two subproblems have two variables. So I can use a very, you know, very systematic brute force approach of just writing out the truth table. So I'll start with the first part, if x, then y, otherwise 0, and I'll just write out the truth table. I'll write out all the possibilities, all four of them, and since there's only four with two values and one bit each, this is something I can actually do. It doesn't take a ridiculous amount of time. I can say if x is 0, x is false, and y is 0, I want 0. If x is 1 and y is 0, I want 0. If x is 0 and y is 0, y is 1, I want 0. If x is 1 and y is 1, I want 1. I just figure that out just for all the possibilities. Remember, since we just, this is if x, then y, else 0, that helps. So I just figure out all those possibilities. And if I look at this truth table, this is in fact identical to the truth table I showed earlier for AND. So I know it's just bitwise AND. Does exactly the same thing as this. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Question? Okay. Okay. So that's going in this direction. Then we have the other half, this. And one way we can think about it is that we just want to get the use the opposite x, so we can take the complement of x to flip the bit in x and then do AND. Since we know that this is the same, so this if x 0 else z is the same as if not x z else 0. And then we just combine those together and we get a solution for this case where x, y, and z are all 0 or 1. Okay, any questions on what I got here before I start removing those constraints? Or things actually get tricky?
Can you go back to one side for a little bit?
Okay. I should probably write more clearly. Okay, so as long as x, y, and z are 0 or 1, this will work. We can actually verify it exhaustively because there are only 8 possibilities for all of them together. We can check that it gives the result we expect for all of them if you wanted to do that. I'm not going to, but you could do that. Okay, so let's try removing some of these constraints. And only working for 0 or 1 is not very interesting. So let's let y and z be any value. But we'll still constrain x to be 0 or 1. It's a Boolean. We're not going to be picky about it being other values. So we'll say x is 0 or 1, but y and z might be any integer. And I still want this to work. And the alt solution doesn't, because it gets you the correct least significant bit. The last bit in all our bitwise operations has the correct value, but all the other bits are messed up. And one example of this is, let's say our y is 2 and x is 1. We have 1 ANDed with 2, ORed with not 1, ANDed with, and let's say z is 0, ANDed with 0. And this 1 ANDed with 2 is 0, because the one bit is not the 2 bit. So when we do our bitwise AND, we have 0, we get all zeros. 1 ANDed with 0 is 0, 0 ANDed with 1 is 0. And this expression, we have lots of 1s set here, but we're ANDing with 0 is 0, so the result is 0 when it should be 2. So we can see we don't get the right answer now. So how do we fix that? And we're going to do our same trick of before, of dividing this into two subproblems, one of which is, you know, if x then y, the other one of which is if x then z. So let's start with the first part. And what we want to do here is we want to keep all the bits of y if x is 1, and we want to remove all the bits of y, make it 0, if x is 0. Which means we want to do y ANDed with some mask, where the mask is all 1s if x is 1, and all 0s if x is 0. So the question is, what's some function which can transform our x from 1 to all 1s and from 0 to all 0s? So you want a logical shift to do that? OK. So how would you do this with a logical shift?
I don't know, I think it's kind of dependent on the sign bit.
OK.
So if you want to turn it into like exclusively 1, you would shift. You would just shift onto a small
one. OK. So your notion is with a log, so no, you said a logical shift, I think you mean an arithmetic shift. So the logical shift is zeros, the arithmetic is sign bit. And you're right, something with the sign bit could be helpful here. So one thing we could do is we could shift x over to the, you know, 31 or 63 bits, depending on whatever gets us to the sign bit, and then do a logical shift back to 0, and this will give us all zeros or all ones. So that would be one possible solution. You know, assuming this is an arithmetic shift. Okay. So that's a reasonable way of doing it. That's pretty compact. There's also some more brute force ways you could come up with. So one thing you could say is I want to set x ORed with x shifted over 1 to move x one place over, ORed with x shifted over 2, and keep going until you've saturated all the bits. That would be another solution that works. Maybe not so efficient, but you don't depend, but it works if x is unsigned, for example, in C. And on the slide, I have a really cheap solution that seems like cheating because I wasn't being very clear about what operators were allowed. Which is to use minus x. Which you could also write as tilde x plus 1. But you're probably complaining, hey, why are we using minus or plus? I just wasn't clear about whether that was allowed, but that's certainly the simplest way of writing it if you're allowed to do that. But you can also do the logical shift trick or the just shift into every place trick. And we'll have a better version of the shift into every place trick you can think about. There's a better version of that, which will come up from stuff we'll talk about later. So if we use this cheap trick I showed you, we get minus x ended with y. And you saw that there were other ways if you're really dissatisfied about us using the minus operator. Okay. So how about in the other direction? How about for the other side? So here I want if x, then 0, else z. So I just want to turn 0 into all 1s and 1 into all 0s. So that's a way I can do that. Given that we learned minus x would work for the other way around. Yeah?
Just not minus x in football bits.
So you want to do not minus x? So what would this look like? So which not operator?
The bitwise not. Bitwise and flip.
Okay, so you want to do minus tilde x?
Yes.
Okay, so let's check if this works. So let's say x is 1. What's tilde x going to be? So if x is 1, then in bits this is 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1.
I guess we have to do. And this, you have to do not minus x, right? Or you like tilde minus x, right? When you have to do tilde minus x?
Okay, so you want to do tilde of minus x. Is that your proposal? Okay. That seems like, so yeah, tilde of minus x, that does seem like it would work. Yeah. Yeah. So tilde of minus x minus tilde of x doesn't quite work because we flip 1, we turn 1 into a number which is not negative 1 and then negate it and we get the last bit is set wrong. But yes, indeed, tilde of minus x is a solution because we end up with 0 or negative 1, and then we flip all the bits of that. Another solution that I came up with is we use XOR to flip the last bit in x and do our same transformation we started with minus of that. So we can then combine these two solutions and we can get an answer, and there's other ways of doing the minus x thing in there. So there's a bunch of solutions which all satisfy sort of our properties of doing things which look like they won't require any actual conditional jumps or anything like that, or any comparisons per se, which might be good. Okay, so we still have one constraint, so this doesn't quite do what our original operator did. So let's see if we can get rid of that. We just want to get rid of the constraint on x. And if you remember how this works on C, that you can think of this as being equivalent to, because of how truth works in C, you know, if x doesn't equal 0, because 0 is the only false value in C. So there's an easy way of doing this in C, which you'll probably call cheating. And that's to take advantage of the exclamation point logical not operator, which is to use !!!! Because if you take logical not once, you get 0 or 1. You take it again, you get 1 or 0. So that would be the easiest way of doing it. And in x86 assembly, you might wonder, how does that work in assembly? Well, it turns into a test instruction, typically followed by SETI or SETANY, which copy from the zero flag into a register. Okay, so that's a full solution with this little bit of cheating, and we'll talk about, like, what if we really just wanted to use bitwise operators? What does that look like? Which might also give us some notion of what is the test operator doing in hardware is another way of thinking about it. given that the hardware is implementing that operator with gates. Okay, so a note about performance. So, sort of, in ancient times, you might have said, doing these sorts of bitwise things is going to make things simpler and faster. Whether that happens is complicated. So on a typical modern desktop processor, bitwise AND, OR, XOR, all those shifts, and add, subtract, and compare all take about one cycle to do. I'm saying about one cycle. Later in the semester, we'll talk a lot more about what the about is there for and, you know, some complicated factors in that. Integer multiply is like 1 to 3. Integer divide is like 10 to like 150. And you might say, gosh, this doesn't make much sense. Isn't a bitwise AND way simpler than a subtraction? And you're right, it is. It's way simpler in hardware than a subtraction, but it takes about the same amount of time on a modern desktop processor. So what's happening there is basically that the hardware designer said, well, it's really important to do adds and subtracts well, because they come up all the time. And yeah, it's more complicated, but we're going to design our hardware to do those fast. We're going to have extra hardware to do adds and subtracts fast because it's worth it. And we're not going to try to speed up bitwise shifts and ANDs at the expense of making adds and subtracts a little slower, because that's not worth doing. Even though they probably could do that. If like bitwise ANDs were their top priority, yeah, you could make them faster than add and subtract probably. So even though things are simpler, it doesn't mean that on a real processor, they'll actually end up being any faster. This is a caveat with these sorts of bitwise operators. Okay. Any questions on this idea of how performance works with these operators? Okay, so let's go back to our cheating problem. So we wanted to turn 0 into 0 and not 0 into 1, and we had our C cheating solution of double exclamation point. There's also another solution if you have minus or plus, but what if you don't have any of those? How can we do that with just bitwise operators, which you can think of as like the fundamental building blocks we have in the hardware? So what's a way we can do this? And this is a daunting problem. Like I just tell you, do this with bitwise operators. We have this big number. We need to find bits anywhere in it, figure out if anything is not set so it's not zero, and do that. An easier way of thinking about it is, what do we do if x is 2 bits? So with 2 bits, we can say we have, these are our possible values of x, and we want to have these results. What does that look like? What bitwise operator that we've seen before does that look like? Yeah. This looks like OR. So with 2 bits, we can say, oh, we take x and x shifted over 1, and we OR those together to get the bottom bit and look at the bottom bit. So that's our 1 bit, our 2 bit solution. So I take, so in the case of like 1, 0, I take 1, 0 shifted over 1 gives me 0, 1, and I take 1, 0 not shifted over gives me 1, 0. I OR those together, I get 1, 1, and I only look at the bottom bit of one result, which I can do by ending with 1, let's say. So that's a 1-bit solution, and we can extend that same kind of principle to 4 bits. I'm just going to do this brute force check every bit solution to figure it out. And we can simplify that a bit by noting that here I've done the extract each bit and OR the extracted bits together. I can simplify it by noting that if I extract a bit or the bits together. I can ignore all the other bits. I can do that at later. So I'm going to do a bunch of ORing, but I'm only actually caring about the least significant bit. I'm going to AND them to end with one at the end to get rid of weird values I had in all my other bits. Like in this example here, I had a 1 in the top bit. I don't care about it. I'm going to get rid of it at the end for this 4-bit example to simplify it. So this is what I end up with for 4 bits. And we can obviously extend this to 64 bits. We wouldn't want to, but we can. But let's look at this and say, you know, is there something I can do about this which will make me happier to extend this pattern to 64 bits? Because this looks pretty daunting right now. And an observation we can make is that we're performing 3 bitwise ORs here. And each of the bitwise ORs is doing 4 operations. We have a 4-bit number, so we have 4 bits that we're ORing together, and we're using exactly one of those results. We're ignoring all the others, but we have all this extra work we're doing, and it sure would be nice if we could take advantage of the fact that we're doing these extra bitwise ORs. Rather than computing these 3 extra bits here and never ever using one of them. And if we look at the values we're computing in the middle here, we actually find out that we're computing something that's useful with these other bitwise OR operations. I'm going to show you that here. So here is our first bitwise OR. We're taking X ORed with X shifted over 1, and we're getting some Y, which is those ORed together. So you can think of us going down each column. We're taking X0 ORed with X1, this is our 4-bit number, and getting X, as our last bit is X0 ORed with X1, and X1 ORed with X2, and so on. And we have, I'm just highlighted 2 places which are interesting. The final result we want is just all the bits ORed together, because that's going to be 1 if any of them are set. That's just a property of bitwise OR. And it turns out, after this first OR, we have the bottom 2 bits ORed together and the next 2 bits ORed together. We just already computed them, but in our original statement, we're computing later on, we're shifting over by 2 and 3 to recompute X3 ORed with X2. What we want to do instead is say, oh, I'm already computing this, I can just reuse that value. But we have both parts with X ORed with X2. So how can we take advantage of this? How can we take advantage of the fact that we want X3 ORed with X2 ORed with X1, and we have both parts in this value, and I don't want to have to recompute X3 ORed with X2. So what do I do to get X3 ORed with X2 from Y? How can I do that? Yeah. So we can AND it with the appropriate mask. So we could extract it with Y ANDed with, in this case, is actually 3. Or not 3. This is the 1's place. This is the 2's place. This is the 4's place. ANDed with 4. So that would extract that bit. And we also want it in the bottommost place. So I'm going to move it over by 2 after extract it. Okay. To get it to the bottommost place, but we want it eventually, because at the end we want to have 0 or 1, so we only care about the bottommost place, so all our bits have to end up there at some point. So let's consider Y shifted over 2. I get X3 ORed with X2 in this bottommost place, 0 ORed with X3, 0 and 0. And if we OR these two numbers together, we have X1 ORed with X0 ORed with X3 ORed with X2, which is actually the result we want. And we have some other things. We have X2 ORed with X1, which you would have gotten rid of by just extracting only this bit. Here I haven't done that, so I have x3 over with x2 over with x1, and I have my original x3 over with x2 in this high place. But what we can do with our final answer here is just AND this with 1 to remove all the other bits, all the bits I have grayed out. So you see that we have this sort of fan-in pattern. And this is a very common thing that comes up when you're trying to do fancy things with bitwise operators. And it also has a natural sort of hardware interpretation, which is a common way that hardware is built, which is that we can build, you can think of a sequence of gates where we take in a bunch of bits and we have a sort of a tree to actually use multiple gates to compute one value. And this is a common way you might build something like the circuit which computes the zero flag. And we're just simulating that with multiple rounds of bitwise operators. So questions about what this sort of fan in to check if any bit is set here. And so by doing this for 4 bits, I got rid of one OR operation, and which will save a bunch of time. And I got rid of one OR operation just by observing that I'm doing now, instead of effectively here, originally I was doing one OR that I cared about and a bunch I didn't. Here I'm doing 2 ORs that I care about and a bunch of extras I don't. So I'm getting more out of my bitwise operators. And that's a way, when we're trying to get efficiency here, we want to think about is I'm doing all these bitwise operations, even if I don't ask for them, like they're all going to happen. Can I take advantage of that? Okay. So that gives our sort of 4-bit solution here. This is a way of writing it, the temporary. And this is similar to the format you might write in the assignment, which is why I'm writing it down this way. Note that temporary variables are not a restriction we have in our bitwise puzzle assignment, and really useful when you're writing code to name variables and not try to fit everything in one line, even if you can. Okay, so questions about code? So we can extend this kind of fan-in pattern to, say, 8 bits, where in my first operation, I compute every pair. And in this case, the pairs are one apart. I could have done some other distance and had some similar pattern like this. In this case, they're pairs one apart. And then I do have values that are 2 apart I want to OR together. And then I have 2 values that are 4 apart. That I want to OR together, and I get all the bits OR together. Oh, yeah. This is the correct answer, sorry. Our final answer is Z OR'd with Z over 4 is going to give us all the bits OR together. So does this sort of extension make sense? And so here, my first operation, I'm doing 4 ORs I care about of the 8 bits I have. And the second, I'm doing 2 I care about of the 8 I have, and so on. So I'm getting more out of it, but it still is not like I'm using all the work that the processor is doing for me. And we can extend this all the way to, say, 32 bits. Okay, so this idea of like using one operation to do lots of pieces of work we want to do in parallel to sort of like do a little loop So we can think of the bitwise operators are like, if you were writing this with like Booleans, you'd have to write a loop for what they're doing. This comes up in other places. Having this single instruction work like a loop. So for example, it turns out that modern x86 processors have an instruction which is add four pairs of integers together. Just like they have an instruction which is AND all the 64 bits together of two pairs of numbers. They have it four pairs. And we'll talk about this much later in the semester. We'll talk about something known as single instruction multiple data, which is basically about using this. But bitwise operators are sort of the most simple example of this idea of having one instruction that does lots of pieces of work in parallel, but it's all the same work. It's not like, when you learn about threading, probably later on, or multiple processes, it's not like that, where like one browser window is doing something completely different. These are all the same work, just on different pieces of data with one instruction. And this is a way we can get more performance out of our processor that's easy for a processor to build. And even when you don't have special instructions like this, you can often simulate it. One way is that the bitwise operators, we said, were something we wanted to provide anyways to just be able to manipulate bits, but they let us see this type of parallelism. And it sort of comes up naturally in some other cases. So if we think of like base 10, if I want to do one base 10 addition and add 14 plus 23 and 13 plus 99, I can just add these two big base 10 numbers together, and I can read out, 14 plus 23 is 37, 13 plus 99 is 114. One operation. And I can apply the same principle to base 2. I can say 110 plus 011 is 110 plus 101 is 111. So I can do the same thing in binary. Just because it works out. But processors, in fact, have instructions to like do this properly, so you don't have to worry about how many zeros do I need and all that stuff. But it's fairly simple for them to implement because basically they're just doing an add slightly differently. Okay, so that's on bitwise operators. So we're gonna have these bit puzzles, and generally, if you ever come across these problems, like in an interview or on our homeworks, general strategies. So use paper, look for subproblems. Like if we tell you to do something like give me one or zero if any bit is set or something like that, like I didn't solve that by just thinking about the think problem to begin with and come up with that nice solution you saw with the parallelism. I started with subproblems, and that's sort of what you should do. You should say, what if the numbers are smaller? How do I do it then? Work from that. You can look at mask and shift is the general pattern you want to use. If you want some bits, move them to where you want them, mask them to extract only those. Yes, you might be able to omit the mask sometimes. Like we saw, there were a lot of cases where we cared about only one bit and didn't mask with one until the end, but you can do that transformation later. You can worry later about, do I really need to get rid of all the other bits by looking at where they end up, by doing this sort of factor and distribute after the fact. And the general divide and conquer strategy, look for that sort of do half the problem, fan it sort of thing. And also just common sub-expression elimination. Remember, like, you don't need to do everything in one line. If it becomes assembly, like, you can have temporary variables because you're gonna have registers anyways. So like, don't be afraid to do that. It also makes working with things easier. Okay, so since we've talked about bitwise, let's go through this exercise here. So I want to swap the last and second to last bit. So I want to take A, B, C, D, E, F as binary and turn it into A, B, C, D, F, E. So that's the binary representation of X. So the question is, which of these does that? And for figuring this out, I recommend figuring out what happens to my A, B, C, D, E, F in each of these cases, just work out like what does each operation do to it. Like shifting over one moves it, it gets rid of the F, adds a zero, and work that sort of way, probably on paper. I wouldn't figure this out in my head and assume I got a close to right answer. I'll give you a minute or maybe more, check with your neighbors. Great. Okay, who needs more time? I'm volunteering. So who thinks A is correct? Or who thinks A is incorrect? Let's try with that. Thinks B is incorrect? C? Couple people. D? Who has no opinions about any of these? Okay. So I'll go through, just A as an example. So for A, we look at this first part, we take A, B, C, D, E, F, we shift it over once, we get a zero at the beginning, then we extract that bit, so we have E, which is, remember, we wanted to eventually get A, B, C, D, F, E. So we have the E in the right place. And then we take A, B, C, D, E, F, and we remove all but the last bit till the one that gives us a mask of 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0. So we get A, B, C, D, E, and we OR those together and get A, B, C, D, E, E, which is so close, but not what we wanted. So our fix would be, So our fix here would probably be that we'd want to, if we just shifted this over 1 first, then we'd have a correct solution. Okay, and that's what I have for today. So continue. Next time we'll start talking about instruction sets.